Welcome to the Space Show.
Hello, Andrew.
There are lots of satellites. You work with a particular type. Perhaps you could run through the types of satellites that are there and the ones that you work with.
The satellites fall into two main categories. One type that most people would be familiar with are the communication satellites, satellites that are in space receiving signals from Earth for communication purposes and transmit them to other parts of the globe. The reason that you now can make very speedy telephone calls to the United States, to Great Britain and to Europe is usually because of the communication satellites. It's where we get our international television programs from. It's like CCN during the Gulf War. So the communication satellites are one that actually transmits signals, but that's all they do. The other type are satellites that actually observe planet Earth, get information from the radiation, visible or infrared or any other type of radiation which is emitted by the planet, and they transmit that information that they've collected to ground stations, which can then transform the information into a usable picture that tells them lots of things, either about our weather, about the minerals in our soils, or about a whole host of other information.
And it's that sort that you use here, isn't it?
Certainly. Our business here in the Division of Atmospheric Research is to look at satellites that can be used for meteorological purposes, but that can also be used for studying other aspects of the environment.
So you don't actually use the weather part of the data, you use another instrument.
Well, there are a whole range of instruments, again, on these weather satellites. Some of the instruments actually give you temperature profiles of the atmosphere, for example. Those instruments and their information we don't use. That information is used by, say, the Bureau of Meteorology because it feeds into the computer calculations that are used for weather prediction. But there are other instruments on these satellites that actually give us the visible and the infrared radiation that is emitted and reflected by planet Earth. It's the same information that you are familiar with when you see the pictures on the weather report every night. It's the picture of the whole part of the globe that Australia is in and shows you the weather patterns over Australia. That's from a satellite that is over the equator, about 40,000 kilometers away, and it's called the Geostationary Meteorological Satellite. It's operated by Japan, but Australia has free access to it. Our main interest lies yet in another type of satellite, which is a smaller satellite that circles planet Earth from north to south. It flies over the poles, and therefore it keeps going round and round the planet while the planet itself is turning. So it won't always fly over Australia. It'll fly over Australia, it'll fly next over Western Australia, it'll fly over further west. But every 12 hours, that satellite comes back over Australia and we can get a new picture of what the weather, the plant life, anything else, the oceans, what they look like at that particular time of the day.
So they come over, what, mid-afternoon and then about 2 o'clock in the morning, is that right?
These particular ones come over late afternoon and early morning. So we get passes that I think are about one satellite about 4 o'clock in the afternoon and 4 o'clock in the morning, the other one about 8 o'clock in the evening and 8 o'clock in the morning. And not only can we get that particular pass, as it's called, when the satellite flies over and reads the information and transmits it down to our antenna, we can always still get also the pass before, when at the previous orbit, or the pass after. Because the satellite takes only about 90 minutes to circle the whole globe. And so we can not only see what the circumstances are like to the east of Australia, but also to the west of Australia. And so that whole system of passes will give us a very good everyday look at what the weather, but also what the oceans and also the land surface looks like.
So from Aspendale then you can see what, out into the Tasman Sea?
Certainly. We can see as far away as New Zealand. We can also see as far away as New Caledonia, for example. At the same time, we can look as far west as Western Australia.
All right, so that gives you a pretty good coverage.
It gives us a very good coverage, and on top of that, there are other ground stations like Aspendale in other parts of Australia. There's another ground station that can do the same type of work in Perth. There's one in Townsville, and there's also one in Hobart. So between these different ground stations, there's full coverage of all of Australia.
You've got the data down, recorded here in Aspendale. What do you do with it now?
Well, the particular satellite that we use most is the NOAA satellite. NOAA stands for the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration in the United States. These satellites, too, can be used free of charge. They transmit their data. Anyone with an antenna can actually tune in. Once we have the information, we have what is called a picture made up out of pixels. A pixel is one little block of what the satellite has seen on the surface of the Earth for which it has a radiometric reading, a reading of how much radiation at a particular wavelength was emitted by that part, which means we get pictures which are in a part of the electromagnetic spectrum that look as if you've taken a picture in the red spectrum, in the green spectrum, and also one in the, or two actually, in the infrared part of the spectrum. Each of these pictures has a resolution, that is the finest detail of what you can see, of about 1 kilometer squared. So any object that's larger than a square kilometer can actually be seen in the picture. And we can overlay the different pictures from the different wavelength observations so that the total image gives us as much information as possible. So it can give you information on what the vegetation looks like, how green it is, for example. It can give you information on how warm or how cold the surface is, which comes from the infrared part of the spectrum. And by getting information about how cold or how warm the surface is, we can combine that again with the greenness or with other indexes, and altogether we get a total picture of not only what the ground looks like, but also what the ocean looks like. And it's that sort of information that then can be turned yet again into a new purpose of customizing it effectively for users out in the community that need this information.
So who does actually use your info?
Well, a very interesting example of what we've been doing here in Espendale is that we've devised a system whereby throughout the whole year, starting in November, we can look at total pictures of Victoria, of what the vegetation looks like, how green it is. And these images that we collect every week or so, sometimes every 2 weeks, can be compared from week to week as to how in spring, when it's if it's raining, for example, and if everything is growing very rapidly, how the state, how the vegetation, the grass especially, is growing very rapidly. Later on in the season, as it gets drier, as it gets hotter, our satellite images can also tell us how this green vegetation is slowly drying out and finally drying off to the point that it becomes a fire hazard. And so our satellite images can be transformed into usable pictures for the country fire authority to keep a bird's eye view on what the fire hazard situation is right across the state of Victoria.
And in Victoria, can't they just look out the window and see what it's like?
Well, you can do that. And the old-fashioned method, of course, was that Country Fire Authority had special officers that went around the state and did spot checks, where they would put out a frame of about 1 meter squared and take all the grass and see how dry it was and how much grass there was. And they still do that. They need ground checks on what the fire hazards are like. But to keep an eye on the whole state and send officers into remote areas, into, for example, in the northwestern part of the state, there are very large areas where you couldn't possibly survey the whole region. To get it all on a single picture every week as a printout as to how things are drying off is fantastic from their point of view.
So it must save the County Fire Authority a lot of money.
Oh, certainly. And they're very pleased with the product, and they're working actively with the CSIRO to actually make this into a product that they can use all season round.
And do they have to pay you for the service?
Certainly. There is a small charge that we have to have to levy effectively to make sure that we get paid for the effort that we put into developing the product. On the other hand, it still is a case of mutual benefit. We'd love to think that we are doing research which has immediate practical benefit for the community, so we're not trying to squeeze the last bit of money out of them.
The NOAA satellite also looks at the ocean regions around Australia. What data do you get from that, from the satellite?
That's probably the best second example that I could mention. The satellite, because of its infrared channel, which is effectively looking at radiation, which is typical of how hot a particular body or how a particular surface is, infrared radiation can give you a very detailed picture of what the sea surface temperature is doing. And in the ocean, you have large bodies of water that effectively slosh around. There is an East Australian current of warm water that comes down all the way from tropical regions, all the way past the coast of New South Wales, sometimes even around the corner into Victorian waters. There are other currents that operate around Victoria, and all these ocean currents leave a signature in the surface temperature of the water. And so if your satellite gives you a very detailed picture of where the warm water and where the cold water is, then you get an idea of where the currents are. And by looking at where cold water meets warm water, you can find out where the fish are likely to be. And that's something which, of course, suddenly becomes very good information to pass on to the fisheries industry, because often they might otherwise have to cruise up and down the ocean, effectively looking for where the fish are. We can save them an enormous amount of effort by telling them where the best chances are to go and to look in the first place.
So they save a lot of fuel.
They certainly should save a lot of fuel. They can make the whole industry a lot more efficient. And again, we effectively sell the information to them as a product that comes from Aspendale that they can either get on a daily or a weekly basis to tell them where the so-called fronts in the ocean are, where warm water meets cold.
So how do they get this information? Do they come here to get it, or do you send it to them?
No, nowadays it can be done all very efficiently, that we can actually have it available on our own computer system. And with modems, people with suitable modems can actually dial up our system. It can actually dial in directly and get the pictures on their own screen. We do run also a budget service, effectively, for people who don't have that sort of facility. And for them, we can actually still fax them, for example, by fax machine, brief maps of the areas of interest with the contours indicated.
So how detailed, what temperature difference can you actually spot?
Well, the resolution, as it's called, of the satellite image is down to about 0.4 of a degree centigrade. And so it's less than half a degree centigrade. The only problem, perhaps, in scientific terms is that the absolute reading of the satellite might still be out by, say, half a degree, or perhaps even a degree. But given that for a single image, that reading would be out all over the whole area, it doesn't really matter. If you see that there is a range of temperatures very rapidly being crossed from one area to another, you know that the temperature of the water suddenly goes from 16 to 17 to 18 to 19 degrees. You know that's where there is one of these ocean fronts, and that's where the fisheries people would like to go and look.
So the fish like to swim in the area where there's a sudden change in temperature?
Well, actually, the reason behind it is that when warm and cold water meet, there is a lot of upwelling. And the upwelling between the cold and the warm water represents where nutrients are being effectively welled up from below, from the continental shelf, into the surface water. And the fish will always go where there is a lot of food around. And so it's something to do with basically that the fish will follow those areas of upwelling, and the areas of upwelling are identified by where warm water meets cold.
Can you also pick out the chlorophyll in the water?
Certainly. Our particular satellite is not ideal for that, but there was a few years ago a specialist satellite that had a what they call coastal zone color scanner on it. And that scanner was an instrument that specifically looked at particular radiation, which was typical of the ocean productivity of the chlorophyll. And with that particular scanner, they've made global images of where the most productive parts of the oceans are. And that by itself tells biologists a lot about the role of the ocean in biological systems.
I see. Are there any other satellites that you use here?
Well, we sometimes still use the geostationary satellite, the one that is also used for the weather pictures that you see on TV. We also can use our satellite for other things like following weather systems or looking at cold fronts, where you have the cloud lines that identify where the cold front is actually passing. We've used our satellite to look at getting information on the incidence of frost. After all, frost can be a very significant risk to farmers who've actually planted wheat. And if they planted it too close to winter, then the wheat, which should sprout and grow for a certain amount before it sort of goes dormant for winter, would actually be harmed by the frost. Likewise, in spring, other varieties of wheat that are planted in spring, again, you wouldn't want them to be killed off by frost. We're currently looking at a project where we're going to try and identify whether the satellite images can help us in characterizing areas as to where they are frost-prone or not. And so that's another application. You could, in principle, also use the satellites to look at tree cover, at vegetation cover, and land clearing. But if you want to go to very great detail, much smaller than 1 kilometer across, then you have to go to a different type of satellite. Those satellites are not used by this division so much as by other colleagues in other parts of CSIRO. The most familiar satellite is called the Landsat satellite. It's a series of satellites that have also the same type of instrumentation that can look at different parts of the radiation spectrum, but they can go down to a resolution, that is the finest detail, of 70 meters across. And so they can be used to look at crops, for example. They can even spot disease in crops. They can look at the fertilizer state of crops. They can also be used to look at mineralization, find ore bodies, a whole range of applications. If you want to go to even more fine detail, there is a new satellite already flying called the SPOT satellite, which is launched by the French, and that one can go down even smaller, I think to areas about 5 or 10 meters across. So for every particular piece of science where scientists are interested in a particular application, there's almost now a satellite that will serve up the right product for their needs.
Well, thank you, Willem, for joining us on The Space Show.
You're welcome, Andrew.